Our text for preaching this morning comes to us from the 10th chapter of the Gospel of John, the Good News according to John. So I invite you to listen for God's living word to you this morning in these words and in what follows. Very truly, I tell you, anyone who does not enter the sheepfold by the gate, but climbs in by another way is a thief and a bandit. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. They will not follow a stranger, but they will run from him because they do not know the voice of strangers. Jesus used this figure of speech with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So again, Jesus said to them, "Very truly, I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and bandits, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters by me will be saved and will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they might have life and have it abundantly." The word of God for the people of God. Of the Bible's four main stories, four main accounts of Jesus, his life and ministry, the Gospel of John is arguably the most famous. Among ordinary church-going folks like us, it owes its fame in large part to the fact, and we were talking about just this very point in our Sunday school class, adult-led class this morning, it owes its fame in large part to the fact it's home to several of the most famous verses in the Bible. "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us," John 1:1 and 14. "For God so loved the world that he sent his only begotten Son," John 3:16. "You must be born again," John 3:7. "Jesus wept," John 11:35, which also obviously happens to be the shortest verse in the Bible, and thus a perennial favorite among teenagers facing off in youth group competitions centered on who can memorize the most Bible verses. "Jesus wept." On the scholarly level, the Gospel of John is also famous for being home to what are called the I Am statements, including the one in the passage I read just a moment ago. "I am the gate." There are a number of these statements in John, a point we'll come back to in just one second. And when you read them together, it sounds like Jesus is on some kind of ego trip. And I mean that in a very specific sense. Greek is like Spanish in that day-to-day in day-to-day speech, pronouns are typically not used because they are implied in the verb or with the verb. In Spanish, if you were going to make this same claim in ordinary speech, "I am the gate," you would not say, "Yo soy," "I am la puerta," the gate or door. You would simply say, "Soy la puerta," with the first person pronoun yo implied in the to-be verb soy. Stick with me. It's the same in Greek, ordinarily, but if it's not an ordinary situation, if for whatever reason you specifically want to emphasize that you are the gate and no one else is, you would add the pronoun ego, the Greek word from which we get the first person pronoun I in English, which is exactly what Jesus does here. "Ego eimi, I am he thyra," the door or the gate. "Ego eimi, he thyra." But he doesn't just add this point of emphasis here, and he does not just claim to be the gate. Here's the full list of the so-called I am statements in John. "I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. Before Abraham was, I am. I am the gate. I am the good shepherd," she says in the passage immediately following the one we've just read. "I am the resurrection and the life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the true vine." So in total, Jesus makes 9 different self-references here in John. bread, light, being, or divinity, door, or gate, shepherd, resurrection, way, truth, life, and vine. What are we to make of these claims? What's going on here that Jesus would not only say these things of himself, but also make it clear that he's making these claims uniquely about himself? Ego eimi, heithaira. I am the gate, and you're not. In one sense, these claims may not be as remarkable as they first sound. Each one of us can name our own set of unique identifiers. I am husband to Robin, and you're not. I am second son of Helen and Clarence. I am brother to Rusty and Susan. I am uncle to Annalisa. I am staff to Annie, the poodle. I am the pastor of Warren Wilson Presbyterian Church, and on and so on. And again, we could all make our own unique list of unique ways to identify ourselves over against the person sitting next to us in the pews. But it's also true that in Jesus' case, the claims he makes go well beyond mere biology, beyond the ordinary human roles we all occupy as son or daughter or sister or brother or aunt or uncle. His claims are of a different class altogether. I am the resurrection and the life. Before Abraham was, ego eimi, I am. So what's going on here? Who does Jesus think he is? Is this just one giant ego trip, or is something else at work here? Is there some deeper motive driving his impulse to make these unique and seemingly grandiose claims about himself? Well, it's hard to know exactly, of course, because what his motives and intentions were, since we can't just come right out and ask him. Obviously, I think we would all agree that a large part of this answer has to do with his unique status as the second person of the Trinity, as God incarnate. Before Abraham was, I am. Incidentally, the same phrase Yahweh used when he revealed himself to Moses in the burning bush. Tell Pharaoh, I am sent you. But I think the answer also has to do not with Christ's unique identity and role, that is, not just with who he is and with his unique status as God's only begotten Son. Rather, I believe these claims may ultimately be rooted in what he's come to do, and even more specifically, what he's come to give. And we do know the answer to that question, because in this very same passage I read for today, he comes right out and tells us, I came that they might have life and have it abundantly. That's Jesus' mission statement right there. In one sentence, he gives us his modus operandi as defined not by the church, not by some TV preacher, not by a seminary professor, not by your Sunday school teacher, not by me for that matter, but by Jesus himself. I came that they might have life and have it abundantly. At the end of the day, if you're ever asked what this whole Jesus thing was all about, it might really be that simple. He came that we might have life and have it abundantly. And when you view these I am statements through that lens, they immediately start to come into clearer focus. I am the bread of life. Of course he is. Because in peasant cultures all around the world, including his original culture, bread is the staple food, the very foundation of life. But it's not just bread that we're hungry for. The love he teaches, the love he embodies, the love he demonstrates time and time again, unconditional love for the person God created each one of us to be, a love without judgment, without limits. This is the one thing everyone, everywhere, is hungry for. So take, eat. This bread is for you. I am the light of the world. Of course he is, because life only flourishes in the light. And if you're living in darkness, the darkness of fear or hate or anger or guilt or resentment, you will not flourish. So come, be forgiven. Expose your hate or your anger or your guilt to the light of love and mercy, grace and forgiveness, so that you might begin to grow and live and flourish. I am the door. Of course he is, because if you're walled out of community by what the world says about you, judgments about your gender or your sexuality or your politics, about your income or lack of it, or your intelligence or your race or your nationality, then walk through that door. Come out to be who you are, or come inside to this place to gather here with God's people, where you will be loved and accepted just as you are. I am the Good Shepherd. Of course he is, because if you're exposed to the elements, if you have nothing to protect you from the storms of life, and the lightning starts to strike all around you, or the wolves are circling you and threatening to take you down, then of course you need a shepherd to protect you and guide you to safety. I am the resurrection and the life. Well, of course he is, because if you're feeling dead inside, or sealed in a tomb not of your own making, a tomb of judgment, of despair, a tomb of hopelessness or resignation, then he will issue that same call to you that he issued to Lazarus. Come out from that tomb. Step into the light. Breathe deeply the breath of new life and begin to live again abundantly. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Of course he is, because if you're lost or befuddled or confused about who you are or about what your life means, or about whether anything matters in life at all, about the difference between right and wrong, truth and lies, goodness and evil, then follow in his way, and he will put you on a path that leads you home, that leads you to yourself, that leads you to peace and understanding. I am the true vine. Of course he is, because it's hard to be fruitful alone, and if you're isolated and cut off from love, you will not flourish. So come, be grafted into a community that's rooted in God's own life, nourished by God's own love. Who does Jesus think he is? Well, that's who. Is he on a giant ego trip? I think not. I think these statements are more likely a job description. So suppose your Aunt Alice calls you up some night, or your next door neighbor on campus comes knocking at your door. It quickly becomes obvious that they're feeling a little desperate about their life, that however they're living, whatever they're doing to fill their days and their nights is not working for them any longer. They're hungry for something they can't name. Or the lightning has just struck, or the wolves are circling, and they've just sustained a blow to the heart, so hard and unexpected it feels like a mortal wound, something from which they will not recover. And they ask you, what is this Jesus all about? And you realize that they're so stressed, or so desperate, or so sad, they only have the capacity to hear one sentence, no sermon, one sentence of what you might say. If that's the case, you cannot do better than this extraordinary claim Jesus has made about himself, his one-sentence mission statement: I came that they might have life and have it abundantly. But then suppose that this statement resonates for them. They want to know more. They want to know, what does that mean exactly? Well, in that case, you have 9 beautiful declarations at your disposal, 9 unique I am statements of what that mission statement looks like in practice, Jesus' very own job description. But of course, that's only half the story, because let's be honest, this Christ event we read about in John and in all the Gospels happened a very long time ago. This same Jesus no longer walks our streets or roams the countryside teaching people who he is, then showing them what that looks like, verifying what that looks like by what he does. So the same question might reasonably be asked about us, his followers. What are we all about? What is church all about? The good news is that we have an easy answer. Our mission is the same as his. We live and serve so that they, our friends and neighbors and fellow citizens, might have life and have it abundantly. Our modus operandi is the same as his was. It's continue his work, to be his body, alive and at large in the world, to open doors to the excluded, to offer protection to the vulnerable, to offer nourishment to the hungry, to offer pathways of hope to people whose life and health and safety are at risk. When people are hungry, to offer them literal bread and then invite them to join us at this table where their deepest hunger is satisfied. When people are scared or threatened, to welcome them into the safety of this sanctuary and then to advocate alongside them when we leave this place to protect and defend their interests in the public square. When people are lonely, to reach out to them where they live, to invite them and welcome them into the joy and support of a loving community, this loving community. Because this promise of abundant life, it still goes out to all the world, a world desperate for it. And it doesn't start when we die and go to heaven. That's not Jesus at all. It starts right here, right now, with us. Amen.